Welcome to Let's Talk. I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners across the country where the program's broadcast, particularly the local traditional owners, the Jagera, Yuggera, Turrbal and Yugrupul peoples, the Yugambeh, Mananjali, Kombamiri, Noonuckle, Quandamooka peoples. I'd also like to acknowledge elders of the First Peoples of the land, and elders of more recent arrivals. Welcome to each and every one of you. And welcome to all our listeners, tuned in across the country by the National Indigenous Radio Service and across the world by the World Wide Web. Welcome to you. It's great to have your company. And I must acknowledge the traditional owners of the local area where I sit. I'm in Moray Field, and I will find out the traditional owners of the area, Gubbi Gubbi Mob, here. So I acknowledge the Gubbi Gubbi peoples, the traditional owners of where I sit in Moray Field. And I'm at the opening of the Moray Field Health Clinic, First Nations Health Clinic, Aboriginal and Islander Health Clinic. It's been operating up this way for a while, but there's a brand new one fitted out, purpose, well designed for the local health clinic, and it's just amazing. It is amazing. And I've got the Minister, Lawrence Springborg, will be here to participate in the opening. He's the Minister for Health, so quite appropriate to have Lawrence up here for the morning. So it's good that we can broadcast Let's Talk from Gubbi Gubbi Country at the new health clinic here in Walker's Road, Moray Field. It's straight opposite Bunnings. If any of your mob are looking for how to find the clinic, Walker's Road is near the corner of Walker's Road and Moray Field Road, and it's directly opposite Bunnings. Easy to find. So, welcome to the program. And we got a couple of key people involved in seeing this establishment come to fruition. CEO of the Institute for Urban Indigenous Health. Morning, Adrian. How are you, brother?
Yeah, morning, Tiger. I'm well.
Tell us your mob, your country.
Tiger, I'm from the Cobble Cobble people from out southwest Queensland and a little town called Warra, Dalby country.
All right. And Jody Curry, welcome to the program. Jody is the Director of Community Engagement. How are you, Jody?
I'm well, thank you, Tiger. I'm good.
Very good. It's good to have you guys here. This is deadly, eh?
Yes.
We can sit in the car park at the back door with this deadly big mobile studio, walk into the back door of the clinic, and, my gee, isn't that an amazing thing? It's just beautiful.
Yeah, it is.
Now, tell us, the Institute of Urban Indigenous Health, what is it and what's the relationship between IUIH, as we all know, and a new clinic or all your community-based clinics?
Yeah, Tiger, the Institute for Urban Indigenous Health was established back in 2009 by the four Aboriginal Medical Services in southeast Queensland. So the owners, the members of the Institute, Lakes Brisbane, are the first and largest Aboriginal Medical Service in Queensland, Calwyn Health Service down the Gold Coast, Yulaburi Bay Health Service operating as North Stradbroke Island, and Canberra Medical Centre at Ipswich. So a few years ago, in response to what the sector saw some fairly big challenges and threats. A fairly big threat we saw is in terms of mainstreaming Aboriginal healthcare in urban areas. We decided to, rather than confront those challenges individually, we'd come together collectively and look at working hard to identify the gaps in urban areas like South East Queensland and to make sure that the Close the Gap effort wasn't solely a remote community effort, that we also just as conscious to ensure that people in urban areas with great need had access to services. And you see an example of one today, the Moray Field Clinic.
And we saw an example of one, another new one, last week at Kapalabar.
Yeah, last week, Tiger. We also celebrated the official opening of the clinic at Kapalabar last week. It's operated by Yuliburiba Health Service. It's been operating for about 12 months. So we're fortunate to get the ministry out last week, too, to officially open that clinic as well. So
closing the gap, it's not all about government closing the gaps. Is IUIH and First Nations communities closing the gap by the establishment of these new health clinics in communities where there's demand?
Yeah, I think that's the point, Tiger. We talk about community control, and there's a fair bit of talk about community control. I suppose what we've determined to do in southeast Queensland is give community control. You can talk community control all you like, and people have been talking for some decades about what community control is. I think ultimately it's about what control happens on the ground. How do we actually provide opportunities for people to access services and for them to exercise control over their health? And that's what we've seen over the past couple of years. We've seen the number of community control clinics in southeast Queensland grow from 5 to 12. Again, all in response to the sector showing some leadership, now not just to communities but also to the mainstream health system, to ensure that the resources went. And we saw some fairly big gaps once we started to crunch the numbers in southeast Queensland.
Very good, very good. Now, Jody, today's a significant day. It's the 12th of the 12th of the 12th. I mean, all the 12s line up, so you'll never forget the anniversary of this or of this agency. But also we've got NITV being launched on SBS, I think SBS 4 on SBS TV out at Uluru, and that's happened at 12 o'clock on the 12th of the 12th of the 12th. So it is a significant day. Jody, tell us your mob, your country.
I'm a Yukunbeer person. From my traditional country is from the Logan to the Tweed River. My nana's from the Logan River, so Mananjali mob. And also then on my grandfather's side along the Tweed River around Fingal around there. So that's me.
All right. Now, your role in community engagement, it must be... it's quite, what would I say, this is unbelievable that you guys, the work that's been happening, establishing these community-controlled organisations, how important are they?
Yeah, very important, Tiger. And look, and we've been, across sectors, we've been working really hard in southeast Queensland to be able to be visible to people in the community, to be able to be seen as service providers for our mob to close the gap, but also to address issues about education, health, housing and other areas as well that impact on us actually being able to close a gap. So we have strategic engagement with not only mainstream organisations like our Medicare locals and local hospital networks, but also across community controlled agencies and also across GP mainstream GP services. Lots of our mob access mainstream GP services. It's about how we actually have workers who our close the gap teams who go in and work with mainstream GPs to make sure that we're linking up with the services that we provide in our Aboriginal medical services. So it's about us engaging across a whole service system to ensure that we make sure our people are actually getting the best health care that they can, and identifying the different paths and different things that happen in people's lives that maybe that impact upon their health. So a key role for the Institute is about how we, and the community engagement stuff is about how we work across aged care, how we work across drug and alcohol, how we work across mental health, and actually join that into comprehensive primary health care. We talk, you know, lots of times people talk about chronic disease for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, you know, diabetes and high blood pressure and those types of things, but there's these other things that also impact on our health. And so we see our community engagement strategy and our engagement strategies as a whole as a really important part of actually making sure that we're providing quality service to our mob and also providing a continuum of care to them. So the engagement stuff's really big, but another thing for us as the Urban Institute is about our identity as Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people in an urban setting, and us actually being able to celebrate that and being able to tell the mob about the large population here and that we are a community and we have discrete local communities within our big community. So it's about our urban identity as well, you know, the engagement strategy stuff that we use.
You talk about celebration. We're about to celebrate the 40th anniversary of independent community controlled First Nations health service in Brisbane. That's around early 2013. It's obvious that this dream that was established with the first centre here, Melbourne, Sydney celebrated 40 years earlier this year, I believe, 40 years of health. It must be working, Adrian.
The evidence is there, Tiger. I think, looking at the clinic that we're opening up today, it's been operating for about 6 months. But in 6 months, this clinic's actually accessed over 1,000 Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander patients in 6 months, delivered over 500 health assessments. You know, so we talk about community control. What the test should be our people on the ground accessing services and exercising control, and that's the performance indicator for our clinics.
Big population up this way?
Mate, it's huge up this way. In Moreton Bay region we are. Over 8,500 people in the Moreton Bay region. It's the fastest growing of all the regions in southeast Queensland. So you think about Moreton Bay region, 8,500 Aboriginal Islander people, that's equivalent to the total population of Cape York. So it puts it a bit in perspective, eh?
Well, that does put it into perspective, doesn't it? And those people will be from all different areas. been like resettled or relocated here into this area, because there wasn't all that many here 10, 15 years ago.
Yeah, and I think that's been the challenge, Tiger, is that you look at what the Institute found when the full services come together, is that our infrastructure, our services were located where our people were 3 or 4 decades ago. So the inner city, the inner suburbs of Brisbane, now Ipswich, the Gold Coast and Stradbroke Island, in 30, 40 years that the sector's been operating, there's been some fairly big changes, and one has been the huge growth, but also the geographic dispersion of the population to the outer urban fringe. And this is a particular region now that demonstrates that point really well.
Now, you might have got big plans for 2013. This is just 2012 winding up, but 2013 is going to be off and running pretty soon. And I hear on the grapevine you've got a couple of new clinics planned for 2013. Yeah. Tell us about it.
Tiger, we do. With support from Queensland Health and continued support from the Commonwealth, we've actually picked up some funding to establish 2 more clinics up this way. So a new clinic at Deception Bay at another clinic at Lawton / Strathpine. So that'll bring the total number of clinics in the greater Brisbane North region to 4, which is a fairly big achievement when you think it was only 3 years ago even, that we didn't have a single community control clinic in the whole of the north side of Brisbane.
That's fantastic, eh? That's really well done. There's been some great improvements and increases in community engagement and stuff in Brisbane in the last 12 months. You've brought out some great stats that show a higher rate of engagement and involvement by community to the centre.
Yep, we have. Across the whole of South East Queensland now, our services actually reached an additional 5,500 Aboriginal Islander people in the 11-12 year. So that's new Aboriginal Islander patients to community control health services, primarily driven from those new clinics that we've established, all of which have been in response to the needs that we'd identified a couple of years ago.
So despite the cuts, despite the economic and political climate, First Nations people and health and community controlled organisations is really is growing and doing really well. Under the circumstances.
Yeah, I think
a long
that's
way to go.
There's a bit to go, but I think the evidence out of the clinics in South East Queensland clearly demonstrate that we can practice real community control. I think one of the big pushes that we've got is to actually work towards greater independence of government funding. I think it's a pretty empty concept to call itself a community control health service and have 100% of your budget tied up with a government grant and having government dictate where you spend every single cent. I don't necessarily think that matches the original concept of community control. So one thing that we're looking at doing, and a clinic like Morayfield today and a clinic last week we opened up at Capalaba, is demonstrating that we can actually work towards greater independence, a grant funding from the Commonwealth and the state, and actually having Aboriginal people access their entitlement to the MBS and therefore making us less dependent on grant funds in the future. So that's real community control. With the money that we'll generate, we'll be able to respond to the needs of local communities. We'll be able to design programs that meet their needs as opposed to responding to the needs of, whether it be George Street or Canberra.
Mate, it's great to see the growth, the development, all happening at the initiative of First Nations people and mob. Jody, last question. What's your message out there to our mob, to First Nations people in the community, but not only First Nations people? I think we cater to anybody who wants to come into the clinic. Clarify that for me first up, and then what's the message to the mob? Get in here, eh? Get your butts in here.
Absolutely, Tiger. Our clinics are provided. We have everybody come into our clinics. We don't, and whilst the majority of our patients are Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, we service the whole of the community. But it is that thing about what is community control. It's actually the ownership of you. It's actually you walking through the door. It's you knowing the staff. It's the staff knowing you. It's you actually participating in the community events and the stuff that happens there, because then it actually joins us all up and it makes us strong in who that we are, and also, not just within a health perspective, but it actually gets you to have ownership of your organisation and within your community. So come on into your local Aboriginal Medical Service or any of your community-controlled agencies. And next year will be a big year for South East Queensland around the celebration of 40 years of us serving our community. And one thing about all of these great new clinics and stuff, we did an interview with Aunty Pam Mam, who was the first Aboriginal nurse at Brisbane Aches. And Aunty Pam said on her first day in the clinic that she had 3 patients and how great she thought that it was, And she said, and now look, there's thousands of patients. She can't believe how in 40 years what has actually happened, you know. So that vision and that dream that then people like Aunty Pam had back then, we have people in our communities now who have that vision as well, and we'll be strong and we'll grow into the future, and we will be around in 100 years time and 200 years time as community control. So enjoy the time that we're having in actually re-engaging with our community and our new services. So yeah, it's good, it's great, it's a good time.
Hey, thanks for joining us, Jody. Adrian, thank you for joining us, mate. This is great. It's a real achievement. And like Jody just said, it's community-owned, so mob should be getting in here. And it's great to see young fellas like you. You young people, you know, I'm pushing 60. You young people coming on board and running these sorts of organisations. That's what we need to see, that succession planning taking place. And it's just fantastic that you've got the skills and the energy and the youthfulness about you to get here and do it. Thanks a lot for joining us here today.
Thanks, Tiger.
Thank
Congratulations
you.
On the achievement. And what a great story, this community health control, community controlled health in First Nations communities. So thanks to those guys. We've got the next, our next guest is ready to come on in. So we're broadcasting from Moray Field. We're at the opening of the new clinic, the AICS Clinic, Aboriginal and Islander Community Health Service, here in Moray Field, and we're doing a live broadcast. So Let's Talk is coming to you live from Moray Field. It's a first that we've come from this part of the country. And my guest today is Professor Cindy Shannon, Pro Vice Chancellor at University of Queensland, former Executive Officer with IUIH. Cindy, welcome to the program. Good to have you here.
Thanks, Tiger.
Tell us your mob, your country.
My mob are Noongar people from Quandamooka Waters, originally Moreton Island, and now many on Stradbroke Island.
So what's their mob? They're cooking fire getaway on them over there or something. A few fires happening over there with your mob?
Bit of a risk.
Yeah, I reckon. I was happy to see my daughter and her five sons over here because they got a bush camp only just up the road from where the fire stopped.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was real happy to see my grandsons over with me before the fire started.
Yeah, they get a bit uncontrolled once they start.
With them fires or the kids?
Both.
Oh, yeah, right. I was going to say, you know my kids as nearly as well as I do, my grandkids.
I wouldn't be so rude, Tiger.
I think if we know one or two black grandkids, we know them all, I think. And Auntie Ruth Ross.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
How are you today?
Oh, not bad at all, not bad at all. Is that right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Welcome to Let's Talk. It's great to have you here.
It's great to be here.
Tell us your mob, your country.
I come from Gaynder. I'm a Wok Wok mob from Gaynder. My mother was a Mai Mai and my father was a Hill from Warrabinda.
All right.
So that's very entrenched in the Wokka Wokka culture over there.
And you're a local community member?
Yeah, I've been living down here for about 15, 16 years. I came down here for a job, but I've retired 3 years ago. I came down and started working at the school as a CEC. So I did my degree up in Rockhampton, went back to Gaynder, and then I was looking for a full-time job, of course, after having getting my degree, so... One came up down here, and I've always been interested in education because from my point of view, I think education is the way of the future for us mob. Education has to be the main thing that we have to focus on for our children.
Oh, certainly.
Because that's what's going to give them good jobs and to be able to articulate what it means to be an Aboriginal person.
That's important. The identity thing is very important.
Yes.
Cindy, Pro Vice Chancellor. How many First Nations people we got in this capacity in universities?
Not many.
They're as scarce as hen's teeth, aren't they?
They are.
Your people, your mob, in this capacity, this role.
Yeah. Look, I was appointed nearly 18 months ago, and I was the first to a GO8 university, second in the country. The first one was at Charles Darwin University, which is. In Darwin, of course, and a dual-sector university. So for the University of Queensland, it was a very big commitment and step forward. And, you know, it was 100 years in their centenary year that they made the final commitment. So it was a long time coming.
It only took 100 years, but they got there. I mean, that's not bad. That's not bad, you know. Bit of pressure on you. How is it? You've been in the role for, what, 12 months yet or what?
18 months, Tiger.
18, yeah.
Look, it is pressure, but this is 2012. We've got to make a significant contribution and improve the educational outcomes. They're still appalling. You know, and I think the days of the sort of enclave units in universities need to be revisited. I think there'll always be a role for Aboriginal support for students, but I think, you know, we want a whole of university response. We want everybody to take responsibility. And, you know, it's a bit like the reforms we're seeing here in health, that we have to reform the way we do it. Mm. So
the enclave unit isn't, like, that was the first stage of that engagement or that of having a mob on campus, was it?
Yeah.
Is that how you'd describe that?
Yes, and look, it served its purpose,
yes.
Absolutely. You know, in the 1980s, the numbers of Aboriginal students, I started at UQ in 1977, and there were two Aboriginal students known to be on campus then. There was nothing. And now, you know, 30 years later, we're moving to a new model. But in the 80s, the enclave model worked. It set itself up. It opened the doors of universities for Indigenous people. It provided a safe environment, a caring environment. But we're seeing a massive shift too. We're seeing more school leavers. We're seeing more kids, great, getting in on merit. And they want to be treated like any other student. You know, they want somewhere to go if they need it, but they don't want to be singled out necessarily as being disadvantaged, basket case, all the sorts
model.
Of... Yeah, yeah.
This, yes.
Can I just say, I'd like to congratulate you, and I do like to say that I don't think I would have made it at uni without that thing, because I went in the early 90s. That's when I went to uni. I went back to uni after my girls are, and with that, and I went to Rockhampton. Without having someone there to turn to, I don't think I would have made it. So I would like to congratulate you too. Thank you.
And I totally agree. And we will always need to provide a place for Indigenous students on campus. Mm.
Thank you.
But it's not the only thing that we should focus
on.
Yes,
there's other strands or other... How important is it to be involved? Well, to be here to celebrate, join in the celebrations, this sort of thing. You've been in health for a long time.
Been in health for 23 years, Tiger.
Yeah, you don't look old enough, you know.
You're being nice to me. Look, this is fantastic. And, you know, I did some of the early work. As you said, I was the executive officer and I did the business planning. I was part of the group that prioritised this region as the number one priority for the Greater Brisbane area. And to see now, less than 3 years later, a clinic so vibrant and so well up and running is just fantastic, and I have to congratulate all the staff and particularly the leadership shown by the Institute, because it's just a fantastic outcome.
Isn't it amazing? Mm. And just the establishment of the Institute itself too, to be there, to be supportive and to encourage this sort of growth and development. I can remember before there was a health service, a community controlled health service, and to see this growth over 40 years, and it's happened at the initiative of our mob, isn't it? It hasn't been government coming in saying, look, health's bad in the First Nations community and this is how we can fix it, working with your mob.
Yeah.
It's blackfellas been doing it.
And absolutely, Tiger. The leadership that's been shown is extraordinary. It represents reform, it represents Indigenous control, leadership, ownership, and I love being part of it.
I'd like to totally agree with what you're saying, Tiger, because without Aboriginal leadership and our... When you look at things, most things that Aboriginal people think about doing, and then if the government will come to the party and take it on board, it usually works. Now look at your radio station, for one. And then you look at education. When Aboriginal people are involved in education, there's more kids coming. Now this type of thing, more people are coming to look at the health, because when they come here as a patient of this service, when they come here, you feel comfortable. It's not just sitting in the corner. There's always somebody that you know there, or the service itself, the nurses there will come and talk to you and say hello.
Much more friendly.
Much more. And for things that you mightn't say, you feel... Oh, okay, she's asking about it. I'll have to tell her about such and such that has happened at home, and I didn't worry about it at the time, but now it might be something
so
that
you're
shows
saying
that...
You think there's better engagement?
Very, very much. Yep. The engagement is a proper word for it. It's
yes,
right. There's much more engagement with the patients when they come here.
Jody and Adrian made a good point when they were on just a few minutes ago. Pardon me? About... First Nations people are closing the gap, IUIH and community, closing the gap in health. There's a demand, there's a big population of our mob here.
Mm.
Bring a clinic, establish a clinic up here.
Mm.
So it's not just on government and government responsibility to be closing the gap.
we have a role to play.
Absolutely.
We have a responsibility.
Absolutely. The government's had a long time to do it. Close the Gap's been around, what, nearly 4 years? And look at the impact of the Institute in southeast Queensland. The numbers of new patients being seen in the Capella Bar Clinic, this clinic, Logan, is just extraordinary. And that has to have an impact on the Gap.
Of course, of course. And not to mention, D Bay and...
Strathpine.
Strathpine. In 2013.
That's right.
It's unbelievable.
It is. It's fantastic.
It's fantastic.
And it's a result of really comprehensive mapping and planning, Tiger. It's not a reactive, vocal, response. It's been very carefully planned based on demographic trends, need, gaps in service provision, all the things that are going to, in the longer term, be seen in the closing the gap measures, I hope.
Mm. Honey Ruth, you're a local community member here. How important is it to have this clinic established? I mean, what did you do before this clinic?
Oh, well, I went to whatever doctor was around when I felt I didn't have a... Yeah, mainstream. I didn't have a...
Did you pick out different one at different times? Oh, I tried that bloke last time. I might try this one over here.
I just whenever. Yeah, I mean, if that worked the quickest. And that's one thing. If you have to go into a doctor's surgery and sit there for a... lengthy amount of time, you're going to get up and walk out or not bother going back. And that's where this service... Another thing that I must congratulate this service on, I've always talked about losing weight. You look at me, I need to lose a little bit of weight. The point is, they've started an exercise program. Now, see, that is an initiative that... And I attend all the time. So the point is, they have an exercise program. So they're not only looking at your health after you've gotten sick, they're looking at how to prevent certain things. So
a holistic approach.
Is you're coming out with the right words there, Tiger. I'm so nervous I can't think of them. That'll be my excuse anyway.
You're doing well. And it's really good to have you. And congratulations on your degree. I mean, that's fantastic.
I've always grown up the family.
And then you've gone off to look after your own educational needs.
Well, yeah.
Fantastic. Well done.
I've always thought, like I said before, education is the way to go. We have to get our kids going to school and staying at school. So that's there.
In winding up, tell us a little bit about identity. How important is identity? We fest some pesky mob. Mm. We get questioned by some of our own mob. Mm. We get questioned and denied within mainstream. Mm. And today, in this time and in this environment and political climate, there seems to be more of it.
Tell me about it.
Yeah.
I constantly get asked... very inappropriate questions like, how much Aboriginal blood have you got? Or, and I am fair, but you know my family, Tiger. Mm. I know my family. I don't have a problem with my identity.
Know your country.
But at the same time, I think there's a growing acceptance of the Aboriginal desire to self-identify and to completely remove colour of skin as being the identifier,
rightly so.
Absolutely. And I see places like this, I see some of the schools activities that I'm involved in through the foundation, and when you get a lot of Murrays together and you see that pride in culture happening again because of something like this, this is just a building. It's not the building, but it's what happens inside this building that instills that pride back, that identity, that wanting to be part of something. And I'm seeing a whole new movement of what I call renewed pride, and I love it.
Honey Ruth Ross, what do you got to say?
I totally agree. I never look at skin colour. I might be tempted at times to look at attitudes and the way they think, but because as I see sometimes, when there's an Aboriginal person there that has grown up, we've all suffered a lot of the same things, and that sometimes comes through when you're an adult. I agree with the people who've been taken away, identifying as Aboriginal and coming back into... I totally agree with that.
Mm.
So, as I said, I never look at colour, but I am inclined sometimes to look at attitudes. And if their attitude... Ooh, wow, that's more of an attitude that... doesn't fit well with me as an Aboriginal person. That's the way I look at it.
Yes, yeah. I think in my words, I jump to myself, well, how black are they? Is my, how I put it in my terms. I'll be blunt, but that's how I think.
Yeah. And you don't mean black by the colour of their skin?
No, I'm not questioning the different shades of grey or the different shades of brown and black.
Yeah.
I'm with life's experiences and life perspectives and all that, those that stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
Final question or comment for you. What do you say to our mob around the place with these clinics around there, community-controlled organisations, whether it be a health clinic here at Moray Field or the Legal Service or Housing Company? How important is it for community to be engaging and even becoming members, not just walking the door as a client, but becoming members and supportive of their local community-controlled First Nations organisations?
That's what community control is, Tiger. You can't have a community-controlled service if there's not a community that is voicing what they want, how they want it run, how they want it managed, what the governance should look like. So my message is embrace the services that are developing, find out how you can become a member, find out how you can become involved, and they are owned by the community. So they're our services, they're your services.
And those queries and inquiries would be welcomed by the powers that be.
It's not. It is certainly not a closed shop or a... I'd like to think that we've moved a long way.
Yes. No, well, Sydney, thanks for joining us, eh?
Thanks, Tiger.
Really good.
Pleasure.
And Annie Ruth, what are your comments?
I totally agree with you, and I will say to the to us as a community, if we have a problem with anything at all, whatever organisation it is or whatever service it is, like this one, come and talk to the people that matter. Come and tell them. Instead of talking in the community, think to yourself, okay, I don't like the way that operates. I will go and say, I have a problem with this. And that is the only way that you're going to get changes, instead of just walking away and not going back. Because it might have been just somebody having a bad day.
Exactly. You don't know what the circumstances are, what's going on in their lives and in their day.
Yeah.
It's a good point you make. Thank you, ladies.
Thanks, Tiger.
Good to have you here.
Thanks, Tiger.
Good to have you here. Well, let's just wind that down. There we go. We fixed that up. Yeah, you're right. No problem. That's partly my fault here. That was Annie Ruth Ross and Professor Cindy Shannon, Pro Vice Chancellor at the University of Queensland. We certainly got some deadly people in the place, and now we've got the clinical director of the Institute for Urban Indigenous Health, Carmel Nelson. Carmel, how are you?
Very well indeed, Tiger.
It's good to have you join us. Tell us your mob, your country. Where are you from?
I was born and bred in Melbourne, actually, and left Melbourne in my mid-20s, which is a little while ago now. Made my way to Northern Australia, so I moved to Townsville and then spent some time in Arnhem Land, in West Arnhem, for 3 years. And then the last 14 or 15 years have been up in the Kimberley region of Western Australia. Moved to Brisbane 12 months ago.
Largely working with First Nations people and in health or other areas?
Yeah, so I'm a GP by trade, and so best part of the last sort of 18 years have been working in mostly remote Aboriginal communities around Northern Australia.
You have some interesting experiences and observations from around that broad, from Townsville across to the Kimberley and Arnhem Land and now here in southeast Queensland.
Oh, look, you know, I feel incredibly fortunate. I think, you know, I was lucky to have had access to education. Really, you know, I feel very fortunate to have been able to, you know, make my way into a career as a GP, and I've had an extraordinarily rich career so far, and it just continues. So have hugely enjoyed the move to Queensland. Certainly the Institute for Urban Indigenous Health is a very exciting place to work, and I think days like today are just, you know, magnificent. It's
make it all worthwhile.
Time for rejoicing,
right. For sure. Do you think your life has been enriched with due to your engagement with First Nations people? Has that helped in any way broaden your view, understanding? Because a lot of mainstream Australians, 95% or more, I'm just plucking figures out of the air, live and die without even engaging, being able to talk to a blackfellow or First Nations person?
Oh,
what's your view
absolutely,
on your experience?
Absolutely no doubt about it. you know, I grew up in suburban Melbourne. I had very little contact that I knew of with Aboriginal people, almost nothing in my education that raised any kind of awareness about Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people in my own country. And it really wasn't until I moved up north that, you know, my eyes started to be opened. I've had some magnificent colleagues, some wonderful friends, and there's absolutely no doubt about it. It's enriched my life, you know, to a tremendous degree, really. I think, you know, it's been an ongoing learning curve. I think that's, you know, certainly one of the things that I realised very early on is, you know, people are different in all parts of the world, and the same goes in Australia, that's for sure. You know, different mob in different places, and and, you know, the learning curve for me continues.
And quite diverse.
Oh, absolutely.
Like our people, First Nations people, are quite diverse, from southeast Queensland through the Townsville mob across to Kimberley, as you said, and places.
Absolutely, and I think, you know, for a GP or for a health professional, you know, different health issues, different context in which those health issues are occurring, at the same time, many commonalities to some degree. You know, there are, I guess, some, you know, surprises for me in a way at how strong some of those commonalities are between very remote and urban, and, you know, recognising difference at the same time. But I think, yeah, you know, a number of health issues that are different, but many health issues that are common, and, you know, obviously solutions that need to be local.
Hmm. What's your role at the Institute for Urban Indigenous Health Incorporated? You're the clinical director. What does that mean? What did you do during the course of the day? What's your day hold for you? You know, yeah. What are you supposed to be doing?
Oh, look, it's a fantastic job. It's a really diverse role. So I work as a GP. So I do roughly a day a fortnight. I've been doing a day a fortnight with the Moreton Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Community Health Service since its early days. So back when it had a presence inside the North Lakes Health Precinct. And continue. So as we've grown the medical workforce here, my role has changed a little. But I really enjoy keeping a hand in. I think it, you know, it reminds you about why you do the rest of the job. Actually, it's incredibly enjoyable. And I'm keen to make sure that I keep a clinical hand in. The other part of the job, we have a service development team at the Institute whose role is particularly focused on, you know, continuing to identify where those gaps are around the region, where we can, you know, look at solutions, whether they be establishing new branches of existing Aboriginal community-controlled health services, or whether it's working with mainstream services to help to improve the way that they respond to the needs of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people around southeast Queensland. So there's a constant and ongoing process of looking at service reform, improving the ways that we actually provide our own services. We're very keen at the Institute and the member services right across southeast Queensland to minimise the reliance on government grants. I think, you know, there is, in a way, no better form of community control than that which controls the resources, you know, to be able to make decisions about how the dollars are spent, how it's reinvested, how you expand and grow services in response to, you know, the direction and input from community. And so it's certainly a focus of the Institute is working with our own existing services to bring about that process of reform. I guess it's about making our services more efficient, more self-reliant and self-sufficient. And at the same time, making sure that the focus, while there's a, you know, kind of heftier emphasis on business efficiency, that we're also making sure that we've got that solid focus on quality and continuing to improve the scope and the quality of the services that we provide. So those are the things that that help keep me busy during the day.
All right. So the community-controlled model works well in this particular instance, in your experience, your views?
I think you have to just, you know, look at the, you know, events like today. And I think, you know, listening to the words of Auntie Ruth Ross before and Cindy Shannon, I think they summed it up incredibly well. It certainly does. I think it's a model that, you know, has proven track record, and I think it continues to grow and evolve. And in Southeast Queensland, that's absolutely the case. It's dynamic, it's evolving, but it retains, you know, the core ingredients, the core values that actually make community control work.
Mm. As a GP, what's a message or two for our mob in community, for our mob out there? Health is of our mob in the community is in a serious state of affairs. What can we do? I mean, we need not just leave it in the hands of doctors like yourselves. There are things that we can do. What do you think?
Yeah, look, absolutely. And I guess, you know, it begins right in the early days. So, you know, right in the time when, you know, a baby's growing, there's an enormous amount that can be done. So many of many chronic conditions actually have their origins in fetal life, so, you know, during pregnancy. And so beginning right back then, you know, making sure we're looking after our mums and families, and making sure that, you know, that environment is as good as it can be for a growing baby, for an infant, for children. And then, you know, as adults, making sure we keep ourselves fit, so getting plenty of exercise, you know, eating well, not smoking, you know, all of those sorts of things make a huge difference. And I guess from a health professional's perspective, it is our responsibility to make sure that we're making ourselves as accessible as possible, you know, that we give people a really good experience when they do make the effort to come in the door of a health service, that they want to come back, you know, not just when you're sick, but that you're accessing services for preventive healthcare, so screening, picking up conditions as early as you possibly can, so that we can help to provide solutions that actually stop conditions from developing into something that shortens life expectancy down the track. So, yeah, I think all of those things make an enormous difference.
Sugary drinks are serious substance or just not that good. It's worse than grog, I think, the sugary drinks, because sugary drinks have been drunk by two-year-olds. Grog ain't. What are your thoughts?
Oh, look, you know, sugary drinks, there's, you know, the old saying, everything in moderation, you know, an occasional swig of something a little bit sugary, you know, definitely not the end of the world. But, you know, as a rule, I think it's not easy changing habits. If we can grow habits in our young kids, you know, if we can help them to form those habits, that mean it's not so difficult to, you know, make a choice that might be healthy rather than unhealthy. You know, it's much harder to change those habits once they're really well established. And,
sure is, so start when they're young, eh?
Yeah, that's exactly right, yeah. No doubt about it.
All right, Carmel, hey, thanks for joining us. Good
My
luck
pleasure.
With your job.
Yeah, and, thank you very much.
Great to have you in. All right,
pleasure.
You have a good day. And that's Carmel Nelson, Clinical Director of Indigenous Institute for Urban Indigenous Health. You'll be right. Yeah, and then we're getting on towards the end of the program, winding up. But before we do, I've got Craig Ackland going to join me now. Now, Craig, welcome to the program, mate. How you going?
I'm going pretty good, thanks.
Tell us your mob, your country.
I'm a Gamilaroi man from around the Tamworth and up to Glen Innes Way and Wellingrove.
All right. Craig, you're Murray Jabri.
Murray Jabri, yep.
You're the CEO over there?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Where is it and whereabouts are you established and what does Murray Jabri do?
All right, Murray Jabri's based at Deception Bay, but we deliver programs across the Moreton Bay region. So,
what sort of programs do you deliver?
We're the Indigenous Community Links provider, so we connect families with whatever services they need in Moreton Bay. We deliver literacy programs from Zilmere to Caboolture. We have healthy community initiatives right across the region. We deliver the disaster message for the council right across the region. We're running an employment summit at the moment, identifying needs in the employment area. We also run playgroups for kids. We had our Christmas party yesterday and we had 28 kids there with their families and Santa came and it was a great day. We also run a lot of whatever the community needs. So we become that sort of one-stop shop where if we can't provide the service directly, we link people
link
in with
people
where they
up.
Need to go.
Yeah, great, yep. Great. Now, you were telling me earlier you have established a A commercial arm, like a business arm.
Yep.
Tell us about that, because that's important. We've got to break the shackles of welfare.
Yeah, we've got to reduce the reliance on funding.
And dependence, yes.
Yeah, luckily we had a board, we have a board still in place that saw this. We identified it a couple of years ago that this could happen. So beginning of last year we put in a commercialisation strategy, and what we've done is we've developed Warralee, which is a Gamilaroi word for to stand up, and it's about some of the guys that come through our programs. We've given them opportunities in, we've got a lawn mowing run, for example. We've got a cleaning run. We could do fencing, we do land care, we do labour hire, we broker out work to local services for disability support. So,
and these are fee-for-service or roles?
All fee-for-service.
Services.
At the moment, Warralee is supporting 7 staff, so that's good. That's, we've moved our organisation from being fully funded to about 40% now, where we're self-funded, and we're looking to move that up even further as we go. So we started in 2004-05, but in 2009 we had one funded position for 12 hours a week. Now we have 22 staff and about 20 full-time equivalent staff.
Well done. How long have you been there?
I started on a bit of a voluntary sort of basis with Murray Ajabri back 2005, just helping out where I could. I did some consultancy work with some submission writing in the early days around 2008-09, and was roped into being the MC at all the events through those years, NAIDOC and so forth, and started full-time in 2010.
Right, well done. Tell us about the big award for the work that you're doing. You won the Commerce Business of the Year Award within Moreton Bay Central.
We're very proud of that, Tiger. We're very proud of that. That's for a little Murray organisation like Murray Ajabri to be recognised by a mainstream business group was something that I actually overwhelmed me. I didn't think I'd be so proud about it, but on the night when they presented the award, they presented it for our model of a non-profit organisation moving towards independent funding and reducing our reliance on government funding. So it was a really good recognition, and we are proud of the award, and we're letting everybody know that we're the business of the year for Moreton Bay Central.
Mate, congratulations. Well done. You're an inspiration for our community out there, and for people to think more of a business sense rather than be independent and breaking that welfare cycle.
Yeah.
Well done,
mate.
And thanks a lot, for joining us today and telling the story.
Yeah, thank you, Tiger.
Keep it up, and let's hope more of our mob will take that on board. Just think about breaking the welfare dependency. And we've got the Minister, Lawrence Springbull, joining me. Minister for Health in Queensland Government. Lawrence, how are you?
G'day, Tiger. How are you going?
Well, I didn't think you were ever going to turn up when they said there's a microphone waiting in there and Tiger's on the other end of the other one. But now it's good to see you here.
No worries. My staff have said I'd better run out here or I'll be in real, real strife. So it's great to be here, Tiger, and absolutely fantastic. And can I just commend you for the wonderful work and advocacy that you continue to provide to your community as well.
Mate, this is not a job. I mean, look at what I do. Sit in the air-conditioned office, listen to great country music, and get to interview people like yourself. There's a mic issue, yes. We'll go to the other one. Let's switch the other mic.
No worries.
That's better. That's better. That's right.
Okay, we're right. No worries. Sorry, I hope.
That's it. We've got you. Yes. You're up here. Well, you launched a new community service.
Absolutely.
Last week.
Yeah, I did, actually, down at Capella Bar. Absolutely fantastic. A community-controlled healthcare facility down the Yulee, and just absolutely brilliant. And doing up here the same thing today with the Morrowfield Clinic. And, Tiger, these facilities are absolutely fantastically successful, because community control, when it actually comes to healthcare, really does provide some results. And the Institute of Urban Indigenous Health, I mean, it's just absolutely brilliant, the model. And it's about identifying where the need is. It's about making sure that the healthcare outcomes are really, really focused on the needs of the clients. And And I mean, I think that this model is going to continue to grow, and I've actually indicated very, very strongly to both Adrian, the CEO of the Institute, and also Selwyn as well from Quake, that I'm very keen to work and partner more to actually see the success of these particular facilities expanded across Queensland, because the reality is we've got to cut down on duplication and triplication. We've got to look at what works. This works, and it's an enormous credit. I mean, this is a model that anyone in the community could be proud of. I mean, if you're on a health care model like this, regardless of an Indigenous or a non-Indigenous, you could be very, very proud. The model is outstanding, and it's a real tribute to the people who've been involved.
It's amazing to walk in that front door and just see how it's laid out, and then the professionalism of people working
it's
here.
It's just great. I mean, you look at the health workers, whether it's doctors, nurses, allied health, community workers, the admin people, they just do such a wonderful job. And it's so successful that it's actually catering for the needs of the non-Indigenous community as well.
Community.
Because something that works really, really well is recognised. And, you know, it's evidence-based. And that's the thing. And I just, you know, and I know that's something that you're strong about. I mean, let's look at the things that work and let's look at the things that don't work. And I mean, this works. It works
that's
really,
right.
really well.
If it don't work, well,
that's right.
Fix it.
That's right.
Sort it up.
It.
Sort it out.
That's
yes.
right.
The National Partnership Agreement ends in June. Mm-hmm. What's the future? What's the future hold? What are your thoughts about this national partnership, and
yeah,
where will it go?
And closing the gap and all those sorts of areas. Absolutely. I mean, we're working through how we want to respond to all of that now. We are very, very committed to making sure that we can continue on with the national partnership when it comes to actually addressing issues of Indigenous health, you know, closing the gap, all of those sorts of things, because we've got a ways to go. We've made some significant gains, but there's a long, long way to go. And on some of the stuff, Tiger, we don't even have the information of some of the things, I think, good enough. Just before I came up to open this today, I met with a professor from the Melbourne University on the issue of Indigenous eye care and some of the wonderful work that they've been doing around the country. And the thing that really disturbed me was the lack of effective data in Queensland around this particular area, because we do know that in the area of eye disease, Indigenous people have a higher rate of susceptibility and blindness. And I want to actually get into particular things and really target and set some goals around the results that we can achieve. And absolutely. And I want to make sure that we can look at what we've done, what we've spent, how we can do it better. So yes, we are committed. We want to make sure that we can actually target and prioritise it in a different way.
You got a good minister in the federal government, Warren Snowden, as far as being supportive of this sort of development as well.
Yep.
He's working well.
Well, I haven't actually had a meeting with Warren yet. It's my intention to actually meet with him next year. I know that he's highly regarded for the work that he's doing in the area, and we've got a range of things that we want to do to address some of the Indigenous health challenges, because we've got some real... We've got at the moment, Tiger, between the different levels of government, between primary health care and secondary health care, and the two aren't just meshing. And we're seeing it when you go the more remote areas of Queensland, you know, the tripping overreach and the duplication, triplicate, and what is expectation of the Commonwealth versus us. It's my intention to meet with the Minister early next year and to work through some of those things and to see more that we can do to actually pass some of these responsibilities clearly back to the community. And we just had that discussion the other day as the Executive Management Team of Queensland Health about setting up such a meeting.
One of the key things, Lawrence, is a coordinated approach, a holistic approach,
right.
not the silo
that's
stuff.
Right. Absolutely.
I mean, for good health, we're needing right. a better education, right. we're needing better housing. There's a whole range
right.
of factors involved.
But, Tiger, you're spot on. There's hundreds of millions of dollars that are just vaporising around the place because we can't get our act together across government and the funded organisations, because we duplicate. We don't actually have the data. I mean, I saw it in the Cape not long ago. I mean, we're out there doing stuff. We've got a funded primary healthcare organisation in the Indigenous area. They're doing some similar stuff. Commonwealth doing similar stuff. And we don't even share the information. You know, if you actually worked, I mean, we've got internal silos and we've got external silos. And you're spot on. And I'm determined to do something about that. Because if we do that, we will do so much more with the resources we've got.
Well, you've got a lot of people in our community that are quite keen to work with you on that.
Absolutely.
Thanks for joining us today. Really good to see you in here.
Okay, have a great Christmas and happy holidays to you and everyone.
You have a Merry Christmas and a Black New Year.
Yeah, thanks.
And not black in a white fella sense. Black is a good, strong one, you know? Yeah, all right?
That's good. Thanks,
so,
thanks Tiger.
Thanks for that, eh? And thanks for coming in. It was really good.
Thanks.
Minister Lawrence Springborg joining me there, Minister for Health in the Queensland Government. And we've got, we're broadcasting live out of the Morayfield Health Clinic. And it's
Well, it's just great. As you heard Lauren say, you know, this is amazing. Community-controlled organisations work, and here's a fine example of how well it works. And with the support of the Queensland Government, it can we're off and running and doing great things. So that's really good to see that commitment from Minister Lawrence Springbook. But it's a beautiful day up here. There's a little bit of wind and some clouds around, but it's just great to be up here at Moray Field, the new clinic on Walker Road, Moray Field. And Walker Road runs off Moray Field Road, and the clinic is directly opposite Bunnings. So it's easy to find. And you mob in the community, wherever you are, wherever you're listening, get in there and support your local organisation. And don't forget midday, NITV, you see it on SBS, okay, launch at 12 o'clock on the 12th of the 12th. Bye for now.